Hi, this is Vivi from Lefkosha, Cyprus, and you're listening to Everybody ESL.
Welcome to episode 70 of Everybody ESL, the podcast for everybody who wants to improve their English, practice their English, or just learn more English. My name is Ben, and I have another good episode for you today. We're going to talk about grammar and vocabulary and small talk and a lot more. You can subscribe to the Everybody ESL podcast at Apple Podcasts, on the Stitcher app, and wherever you find your podcasts. If you like Everybody ESL, leave it a good review so other people can find out about it too. And if you have any questions, comments, or suggestions for me, please send an email to everybodyesl@gmail.com. Okay, let's get on with this episode. The theme for this week's vocabulary is cooking, and the first word on our cooking vocabulary list is ingredient. Ingredient. I-N-G-R-E-D-I-E-N-T. An ingredient is something you cook with. It's something that a food is made from. For instance, if you are talking about making a cake, some of the ingredients in your cake are flour, water, oil, and chocolate. Each of those is an ingredient in a chocolate cake. An ingredient is just a part of a dish or a kind of food that you are cooking. And the next word on the list is seasoning. S-E-A-S-O-N-I-N-G. A seasoning is an ingredient that you add to food to give it a little more flavor. Some common seasonings are salt, pepper, or garlic. These are examples of seasoning, something that gives your food a little bit more flavor. The next word on the list is mince, M-I-N-C-E. To mince something is to chop it into very small pieces. Your recipe might ask for 1 cup of minced onion. That would mean a cupful of onion that is chopped into very small pieces. The next word is mash, M-A-S-H. To mash something is to crush it, to smash it. Sometimes when we cook, we mash some of the ingredients. Probably the most obvious example of mashed food would be mashed potatoes. If you have ever made mashed potatoes, you know that after you boil and drain the potatoes, you need to mash them. You need to smash them together and crush them so that they are soft and so that you can stir them up. To mash something means to crush it or to smash it. The next word on the list is skillet. S-K-I-L-L-E-T. A skillet is a frying pan. It's really just another word for frying pan. A skillet is usually a pan, a deep pan, a pan with tall sides that you use for cooking things or for frying things. And that's similar to the next word, which is griddle. G-R-I-D-D-L-E. A griddle is something that you cook or grill things on. It's usually a square or rectangular surface. A griddle is flat and usually has very short sides running all the way around it. A griddle might be used for making pancakes. It's a hot, flat surface used for cooking. What about this word, simmer? S-I-M-M-E-R. To simmer means to boil something very gently. A recipe might ask you to simmer something for 30 minutes. To simmer is to boil something gently. And sometimes we use the word simmer when we talk about certain kinds of emotions or feelings. Somebody's anger might simmer, or an argument might simmer for a long time. You can imagine two people having an argument, but it's not a big, loud argument. It's not boiling like a pot of spaghetti on the stove. Instead, it's simmering. It's boiling gently. So they're angry with each other, but it's kind of in the background. It's a quiet anger. That's simmering. And the last item on our cooking vocabulary is whip up. W-H-I-P-U-P. To whip something up means to make something quickly. When I hear the phrase whip something up, I think about somebody grabbing whatever ingredients they can find, whatever is handy, and without thinking about it a lot, and without putting a lot of effort into it, they use those ingredients to make a quick, simple meal. To whip something up means to make something quickly, and usually simply. Well, those are our cooking words for the week. Today's small talk topic, or social situation, is a situation you have probably found yourself in, and maybe you weren't quite sure how to handle it. Here's the situation that I'm thinking about. You are sitting someplace, maybe at a performance of some kind. You're in a movie theater, or you're watching a play, or maybe you are at the baseball stadium and you're going to watch a baseball game. And you need to get up for some reason. Maybe you need to go to the bathroom, or you want to go buy something to drink, or you want to go wait for your friend out in the lobby. Whatever the reason, you need to get up, but you're afraid if you get up, somebody else might take your seat. So you want to ask a person who's sitting near you if they will watch your seat and make sure nobody else sits there. Well, that's the situation. How do you do it? What do you say if you're in that situation? Well, it's very, very simple. That is called saving a seat. And all you need to do is ask somebody who's sitting near you, and it's okay if it's a stranger. It's okay if it's somebody you don't even know. All you need to do is say to the person, "Excuse me, could you save my seat for me? I'll be right back." Or something like that. As long as you ask, "Could you save my seat?" That's really all you need to do. "Excuse me, I need to go out to the lobby for a second. Could you save my seat? I'll be right back." "Excuse me, I need to go try to find my friend. Could you save my seat? I'll be right back." "Excuse me, I'm going to go get something to drink. Could you save my seat? I'll be right back." And the person will probably say, "Oh yes, sure, of course, no problem." And you will go, and you'll do what you need to do, and then you'll come back. And then just, of course, remember to say thank you. Well, that's all you need to do if you want someone to save your seat. This episode's grammar lesson isn't really about grammar. It's really about vocabulary. But I think it belongs in this section anyway, and it has to do with the difference between two very, very similar words or expressions. Here are the words I'm talking about. I'm talking about the difference between a few and few. Well, now those sound almost exactly the same, but they have a very important difference. First, let's talk about a few. A few. A-F-E-W. A few. That refers to a small number of things. A few doesn't mean a certain, specific, exact number. It just means a small number. In most situations, it probably means 3 or 4 or 5. A small number. So you could say, "I'm glad that I have a few very good friends." Because that means I always have someone to talk to, and I always have someone to do things with. I'm glad I have a few good friends. I'm glad I have a small number of good friends. Now, what about this sentence? I have few good friends. Not a few good friends, just few good friends. Well, it means the same thing as I have a few good friends, but the feeling is completely different. Because when you hear few, not a few, just few, as in I have few good friends, that sounds negative. It sounds like you're saying I have only a few good friends. It sounds like you are emphasizing how rare your good friends are. You have only a few good friends and you wish you had more. It would be good if you had more. So if somebody says, I have a few good friends, that sounds either positive or neutral. But if somebody says, I have few good friends, that definitely sounds negative. They have a small number of good friends and they wish they had more. They have only a few good friends. So while those two sentences mean the same thing, they both mean, I have a small number of good friends. The sentence with few sounds negative. I have only a few good friends. But what about this expression? Quite a few. What do you think quite a few means? I have quite a few good friends. Does that mean the same thing as I have a few good friends? Well, not really. Quite a few actually means a lot. It means a big number. It's a strange expression. I'm not sure why we say quite a few to mean many. But that's what it means. If somebody says, I have quite a few good friends, I imagine that that person has many good friends. So, even though all three of those sound very similar, a few, few, and quite a few, there are some important differences in what they convey and in how they are used. And now it's time for the joke of the week! That's right, the joke of the week. A joke that is probably not very funny, but a joke that might give us something interesting to learn or notice about English. Here is this week's joke. What color is the wind? What color is the wind? Let's think about that. What color is the wind? Well, wind doesn't usually have a color. What color is the wind? Okay, let me just tell you the answer. What color is the wind? Blue. Blue. Huh? What? What color is the wind? Blue. Why is the wind blue? Well, let's think a little bit about that word, blue. And let me ask this. How do you spell that? Well, if it's the color, we would normally spell it B-L-U-E. The color of the sky, the color of the sea, blue. Ah, but what if we spell it B-L-E-W, blue? That is the past tense of the verb blow. And of course, blow is what the wind does. The wind blows. So if the wind was really strong this morning, we could say a strong wind blew this morning. So of course, the reason why this is a joke is that blue can mean two very different things. It can mean the color, B-L-U-E, or it can be the past tense of the verb to blow. And that is what the wind does. It blows. And so that is our excellent and hilarious joke of the week. Quiz time, and that means I'm going to read four sentences, two times each, and I'm going to read these sentences pretty quickly. I'm going to read them at a natural conversational speed. And it might be a little bit difficult for you to understand every word that I say. But after I read each sentence quickly two times, I'm going to read them again much more slowly so that you will be able to understand every word I say. And I will make sure that I take the time to explain any interesting or unusual vocabulary or grammar. Okay, well, let's get started and let's see how well you can do. Sentence number one. Could you add a touch of seasoning to the soup? Could you add a touch of seasoning to the soup? Sentence number two. My cousin has quite a few friends at college. My cousin has quite a few friends at college. Sentence number three. The wind was blowing so hard last night, I thought my house would fall down. The wind was blowing so hard last night, I thought my house would fall down. And sentence number four. I dropped my new skillet and almost broke my toe. I dropped my new skillet and almost broke my toe. Okay, well, how was that? Was that too fast to catch every word that I said? Maybe so. But I think when I read them again much more slowly, it will be much easier for you to catch anything that you might have missed the first time around. Here is sentence number one, much more slowly. Could you add a touch of seasoning to the soup? Could you add a touch of seasoning to the soup? The first thing I want to mention about this one is that word could, C-O-U-L-D. Remember, we often use words like could and would when we make polite requests. So could you add is the same as saying, can you add or will you please add? And in this sentence, touch, T-O-U-C-H, means a little bit of. So what you're asking is, can you please, or will you please, add a little bit of seasoning to the soup? Maybe you want someone to add a little bit of salt to the soup. That's all the soup needs to be perfect. Sentence number two. My cousin has quite a few friends at college. My cousin has quite a few friends at college. Just in case you don't know, cousin is C-O-U-S-I-N. And in this sentence, I'm saying my cousin has many friends at college, because quite a few is another way of saying many. Sentence number three. The wind was blowing so hard last night, I thought my house would fall down. The wind was blowing so hard last night, I thought my house would fall down. And sentence number four. I dropped my new skillet and almost broke my toe. I dropped my new skillet and almost broke my toe. Okay, well, that is this week's listening quiz. How did you do? And that's the end of episode 70 of Everybody ESL. Remember, if you have any questions about English for me, or if you have any comments or suggestions about future episodes, or if you would like to record an introduction that I can use at the beginning of a future episode, the same way Vivi recorded the introduction that I used at the beginning of this episode, send an email to everybodyesl@gmail.com. I'll be back soon with another episode, and until then, keep going, keep practicing, and keep learning. Goodbye. I'll see you soon.